Welcome to the Speak Like a Leader podcast with John Bates.
Welcome to the show. Today with me is somebody who is a man of mystery, someone who is a bit of an iconoclast, someone who is one of my biggest heroes on earth. And, you know, I was a fan from afar for a long time before I finally got to meet him. And the good news is when I met him, I still liked him. And so that's always nice when that happens, when you meet your idols and you end up actually liking them. And who's with me today is none other than Greg Cook, the co-founder of Stone Brewing Company, the inventor of Arrogant Bastard, and someone that I just really enjoy hanging out and having a beer with. Greg, welcome to the show.
That's I should have drank a couple of beers before that. That
was like, I haven't even had one yet. I'm just beginning to tuck into a Stone Vertical Epic 888 because I've been keeping good care of this, taking good care of this, and you said this was one of your favorites, so here I am.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see how that's going to taste. I haven't had one in years. Yeah, so the Stone 080808 Vertical Epic Ale was released on August 8th, 2008. So you've got a 12 year, 1 month, and you know how many days?
Yeah.
20 days or such, not quite 17, 18 days.
Yeah.
I didn't know math was going to be involved. This is not fair.
Yeah. I mean, we could just kind of.
I was not warned.
Good enough. Yeah. It's pretty.
I'm a beer guy. I'm not expected to. I shouldn't be expected to do math.
That's right.
12 ounces I can do.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So this is, you know, speaking of 12, I mean, this is like 12 years old plus, and it tastes good. Tell me about it. What was it brewed with and stuff? Do you remember? It's on the bottle, but I...
Oh, geez. No, I cannot remember these. I should. But, you know,
you've done a lot of beers.
I am in the beer industry.
Yeah. In your day, you've done a lot of beers. Let me just refresh your memory.
I am in the beer industry, and so that makes some of this stuff a little challenging.
Heroic and impressive in quality. That's epic. So the seventh in an epic series. As with any good epic, herein lies the promise of larger-than-life experiences, heroics, and twists and turns as the adventures unfold. This bottle-conditioned ale is Chapter 7 and is specifically designed to be aged until sometime after December 12, 2012. I went a little long. Provided you can wait that long, all that time, enjoy it in a vertical tasting along with its 10 Stone Vertical Epic Ale brethren. So, yeah, this is a trip to Belgium. That's what I tasted, by Steve Wagner and Mitch Steele in 2008. Special edition of a renowned Belgian golden triple that had been extra hopped up with American hops. Okay, so you know what? That is exactly what I tasted. I couldn't put my finger on it. And Greg, it's perfect that I'm having this now because I was supposed to be in Belgium and that whole area this fall just recently. And then I was going to be going back. And I always, you know, I always bring some good beer back and stuff. So this is kind of, this is going to make up for that here in the age of COVID. So,
yeah, well, cheers to you. Yeah,
thank you.
I wish I was sharing that with you directly, to be really honest with you.
I so wish you were too.
Have you opened it yet?
It's open, and it is in my, now this may be a little bittersweet, okay, but it's in my Stone Brewing Company Berlin glass, which is one of my favorite possessions.
Okay, I was going to warn you that it could have potentially been a gusher. A little bit, you know
what?
It was
basically a mouthful. Yeah, it was just a little bit. It was perfect. That sounded awful, yeah, but whatever. You know, it's good beer.
Outside of the context, it can be bad. But
let's
it was fine. You're totally good.
Yeah,
totally good.
It's very good, and yeah, it's got that very awesome tripleness to it, and it's got some hops. And I guess that's why it lasted so well, so long, huh?
So the Belgian yeast varieties that we used in this Stone Vertical Epic Ale series would part of the ageable factor. That and actually more modest hops. I'm sure that, you know, that was a little bit hoppy for the style, the Belgian Golden style.
Yeah.
But how hoppy is it right now? I'm sure they must have faded quite a bit.
Yeah, there's not a lot of hops in the nose.
No, 12 years later, you're going to be getting some, you know, sort of that Belgian candy sugar kind of, you know, some sweeter notes coming through, I would think. Maybe a little bit of bubblegum.
Yeah, a little bit. And, you know, and it actually has a little bit of, like, I think just because of the age, it's got a little bit of bite, you know, a little bit of that, a little bit of alcohol bite, like not in a bad way, in a nice way, in a Belgian triple kind of way. And a little teeny bit of bitter. I mean, I imagine that in its day, it was notably more hoppy than it is now, but it's awesome. Yeah. I like it.
Yeah, it should still be quite good, no problem. So what you would, the downside of aging a beer that long would typically be oxidation. Uh-huh. As you get, you know, oxidation shows up as being a wet cardboard.
Right.
Which is not a pleasant aroma nor flavor profile. Right. Nobody wants to take a piece of wet cardboard and, you know, like, hey, let me just put a little bit in my glass of water just as a flavoring, like instead of a slice of cucumber.
Yummy.
No. And so that's oxidation as a character. I don't think you're probably going to get a lot because the re-fermentation in the bottle, which all of those beers were, which is basically you're having adding some yeast and during the bottling process, and you're a little under-fermented wort, which is the word for unfermented beer, and it goes through a re-fermentation in the bottle, so that the oxygen is then scavenged in that re-fermentation process.
Yeah. And this has a really nice, almost champagne-like small bubble. It's wonderful.
It's creamy, and that's, again, nice. The bottle conditioning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's fabulous. Well, Greg, let me ask people, let me just tell people, because I always like to say this up front, if they want to follow you on social media somehow, what's the best way?
There's not a lot that I offer in that realm these days, but I am at Stone Greg on Instagram. I'm at Stone Greg on Twitter with, I don't know how many followers, I don't know, like 40,000 or something followers. I haven't been on Twitter in 2 years. I plan on keeping it that way.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
Because cesspool, humanity, you know, all that thing. And
dogs behind fences is what I say.
Yeah. I'm not there because, oh, why? Sanity? I have a Facebook page. Because I don't think I ever shut it down, but I haven't been on that thing in years.
Well, Stone Brewing Company is probably findable on all those outlets. And
at Stone Brewing. Yeah. We're at Stone Brewing. Yeah.
So tell people, you know, I introduced you like I introduced you. Tell people who you are and just a little bit about you. And then I'd love to jump into some stories around leadership and communication and hear a little bit about your, maybe I could say, eclectic rise to power and, you know, things like that.
Excuse me, I have a little ceremonial thing on my side of the equation.
Oh, very good. Cheers. Yeah.
Cheers to you.
Thank you.
Oh, that's delicious.
What is it that you're sipping on there?
Slightly more than a sip, but
there you go.
This is an Alesmith 394. Alesmith is a brewery in San Diego. Great respect and admiration and friendship with.
Yeah.
Peter, the owner, since I'm actually out of the San Diego area at the moment during this COVID thing. And so Peter, the owner of Alesmith, had sent me some of his cheese. He makes cheese. Nice. And he sent me a couple of freshies. And so this is one. And they came in yesterday. And I'm very happy to be able to have an Alesmith beer. I haven't had one for a little while. So
Alesmith is a great, great brewery. They do really
indeed.
Good stuff.
So cheers to Peter. And thank you for that.
Cheers, Peter.
Delicious.
Well, and so, Greg, what is your official title now? You're still affiliated with Stone.
Oh, yeah. Co-founder. Co-founder, yeah. Which is a title that will never go away. I get right? to always yep. be co-founder of Stone.
There you go.
That's the most important to me. I was first president. And then at some point, a couple years in, we decided I should be CEO and Steve should be president. We yep. didn't have a CEO to begin with. So, I held the top job until 4 years ago, almost right about now today.
Yeah.
4 years ago, we hired a CEO.
Yeah.
And then we just made a change in that regard. Last month, Maria Stipp is our newest CEO. I'm very, very excited about it. She's just completed her eighth day today.
Wow.
Ninth day today. Uh-huh. And so the rest of my title today is executive chairman.
Okay, good. Yeah, I knew there was something like that. So
very, it's a title I don't connect to. I mean, it sounds way too formal for me.
Yeah, yeah. You're the co-founder.
Co-founder works.
Yeah, that works. Well, so you know, one of the things, Greg, that I think is an interesting aspect of Stone and how the whole thing played out is that, you know, you guys were one of the relatively early craft brewing places. You guys scored some hits. I know you worked really hard getting distribution, but then distribution is kind of what it's all about, right? It's the name of the game. And instead of keeping it to yourself and trying to cut out the competition, one of the things that I love about craft beer in general, and particularly about Stone, is your collaborative nature. And so you turned around and said to everybody around you that you thought were also good craft beer creators, hey, let us distribute you. And so Stone became pretty quickly synonymous with craft beer, not just Stone. And I think that worked out way better for everybody. What am I, is that pretty accurate there?
Yeah. Yeah. The sort of the short story, or maybe the slightly longer story.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell us the longer story.
You know, we started in 1996, and as it turned out, that's the year the first bubble in craft beer burst.
I think,
you know, we always wondered when that second bubble was going to happen, and a lot of people in the industry have been talking about it for a few years, and maybe we're in that right now.
Yeah.
The time of COVID.
Is making things tough, tough all around.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and I thought some meme thing, you know, it's like, COVID, schmovid, I'll tell you what's wrong with the world.
Right. Hard
seltzers.
Right. yeah, okay.
By the way, folks, that's not me saying that. I'm not trying to downplay COVID in the seriousness, of course.
No,
but
no.
It's
yeah.
okay to have a chuckle.
We need, you got to have some humor in the face of it.
So we started off, and there were no wholesalers were interested in carrying our beer.
Right.
And I thought, okay, fair enough. We got to sort of make a name for ourselves for a period of time. And then a wholesaler will want to take us on. Now, again, it's hard for you to think about in today's world, you know, through the lens of today.
Yes.
But people weren't into craft beer. Craft beer was not really a thing. It was still very, very much a fringe.
Yeah.
And
I was into it, but...
Yeah, well, the intelligent, you know, forward-thinking, you know, really creative people were into it.
Yeah, right.
All the better people. The better people and the geeks, exactly. Which, by the way, are the better people.
There you go.
So, because I'm one of them and you're one of them, and so we self-identify, and yeah, that's how we want to view the world, that we must be one of the better ones, right?
There you go. We all are.
Because that's the payment for getting beat up in high school and being the dork in high school and unpopular. So now we get to be the cool kids.
Exactly.
Okay, I digress.
Yeah, but it's...
And
yeah.
this is my imagination. I'm sure people look at me now like, yeah, Greg, no, you're not one of the cool kids. I mean, take away Stone, and you're definitely not one of the cool kids. I accept that. Fair enough. So... nobody was interested in distributing our beer. Eventually we figured out, you know, not only were we going to have to do it ourselves in the early days, which we knew, but once we did it for a couple of years and during that process got turned down by all the wholesalers, we figured, okay, look, we're going to continue doing it. We actually think we've learned how to do it. We think we're doing a pretty good job. We like the direct connection with our customers. the bars and the restaurants and the hotels and the grocery stores and liquor stores and all that. And so, well, we'll just stay self-distributed. Okay. Well, now if we're going to be a wholesaler, a craft beer wholesaler, let's be a craft beer wholesaler.
Yeah.
And so that's when we started looking out for other brands to distribute. Alesmith was one of the early ones in the curve. For us, I think, I'd be hard pressed to nail in the year exactly, but I think it was 2001 or maybe 2002 that we started distributing Alesmith. So we started in 1996. So it was still a few years later.
Yeah.
Could have been as early as 2000.
Yeah. Okay.
Like, I should know that, but you know, stuff like details like that get lost.
Yeah. Details like that are just details. You're a big picture guy.
Yeah. So the big picture is we are now the largest independent craft beer wholesaler in Southern California, in the United States, actually. Mm-hmm. But we're, you know, headquartered in Southern California. We cover the seven counties of Southern California, as well as Santa Clarita County up in San Jose, basically.
Right.
And we distribute for a good 35 or more craft and specialty breweries.
That's so awesome. Bringing the
We have 140 trucks a day.
Wow.
They go out and make deliveries. We've got, you know, full sales team. So we're distributing, proudly distributing for Alesmith, Pizza Port Brewing, Lost Abbey, Modern Times, Maui Brewing, Avery Brewing, Russian River Brewing, Bear Republic, Victory Brewing, Oscar Blues, local ones like Thorn. Yeah, go ahead.
Every one of those you say, I'm like, I love those guys. Oh, I love those guys. Oh, I love those guys.
Had the privilege of being able to pick really great players.
Yeah, and you did. That's great.
Oh, and we've got a couple of the hard kombucha brands, Juneshine and Boochcraft, which are both making really excellent sort of non-beer, but you know, way better than seltzer. Alternatives.
Right. So Greg, so somebody that's listening, you know, one of the things, you know, I got the privilege actually because of you, and I'll never ever be able to thank you enough. And I mean that because I got to put your logo on my website and say I worked with you. I got to work with you guys a long time ago. And so you know that one of the things that I always tell people is people don't connect with your successes. They connect with your messes. Your message is in your mess. That's Les Brown. And so I'm thinking, as I'm listening to us having a fun time and all the success that you've had, what's a mess that you've had? Like, if somebody's out there listening and they think, oh, you know, God, he's got something I don't have. He's special. I could never do what he did. You know, what's a mess that you could share with somebody to just, you know, tell us about some of the stuff that's not all sunshine and roses?
Yeah. Well, the reality is there's quite a bit to share. And I can tell you, if anybody has the misconception that I am any better, that I am any smarter, I can tell you, and this is not, there is no false modesty here. It's the truth. I am not smarter than you. I'm not smarter than I'm probably, you know what? Here's what I want to think. I want to think that I'm in the upper 50% of intelligence here in the world. I want to think that I'll hit the 52nd percentile. So
slightly above average.
Ever so slightly above average. But I can guarantee you, if I am lucky enough to be in that category at all, it's only by just.
Yeah.
And, I was lucky, you know, there's, you know, that is that whole, fooled by randomness thing, you know, we will often give ourselves as a species, as individuals, we'll give ourselves credit for stuff we do not get credit for or deserve credit for.
Yeah.
And I have come, and I would have been in that category. I would have thought that, the success of Stone, you know, if you asked me 10 years ago, the success of Stone was because I was a little more clever. I was more hardworking. Uh-huh. I was maybe I thought I was in the 64th percentile. you know, I would have been wrong, but maybe I did. And maybe I thought that, you know, it was a couple other attributes, just whatever, pull them out of your hat and pin them. And I thought, okay, maybe that I qualify. Today I look at it and I can guarantee you, I'm certain I don't go, maybe a little more hardworking, perhaps. That's a possibility because we worked our butts off in the early days, and I've worked, you know, a lot since.
That does tend to be like a little more hardworking does tend to kind of favor success.
Well, old saying, you know, when the opportunity knocks, you got to, one, open the door, and then two, you got to stick your foot in the door.
Yeah, right.
That dang thing
doesn't close again.
You got to body check that door.
Yeah, and, that's right.
That's the working hard part.
Yeah, there you go.
And some of us, of course, where the door, you know, doesn't open, and so you just put your head through it.
Yeah, right.
And you're like, surprised.
Got a hard head. That's good.
Yeah. I heard you wanted me to drop by. Well, here I am.
Here I am. I'm not going away. So, Greg, what was a dark moment for Stone? Like, what was one of those, like, low points for you? Was there one of those early on anywhere?
So I had one very early on, and then I had one, just a year and a half ago.
Yeah, I got the glass for that one.
Yeah, that's you're nailing it. So back to when we were self-distributing.
Yep.
We were, we sold our very first keg of beer on July 26, 1996.
July 26th, 1996.
Exactly. We're on our 24th anniversary right now.
Yeah. That's awesome.
And around about October of 1997, the board said, you need to go out and find a distributor for your beer. And I said, no, I don't want to. I like the way we're doing it. They don't understand craft beer. None of the wholesalers, none of them did understand. They absolutely did not understand craft beer. They don't get it. They won't take care of our beer, et cetera. And the board looked at me and they said, and Steve too, my partner who was handling our finances, and they're like, we are bleeding money hand over fist. This is completely unsustainable. The company cannot make it if we don't get it, because what was happening is for every case of beer we would deliver, we would lose $2 because of the
that you low can volume. Scale that.
Yes. And that was what we were afraid of. We were literally afraid of to sell the, you know, an additional case of beer because that was an additional loss.
Yeah, right.
Because we didn't have critical mass. So our volumes were so low because we would go and we would hope that we could drop 3 cases of beer.
Yeah.
But the problem was our beer wasn't well enough known. And so if we delivered 3 cases of beer to Joe's liquor store, one of them would get old because it just wasn't fast selling at that point.
I wish I could go back and buy that stuff now.
I wish you could too, but that would help a lot. But you know, the time that you did come on has been great. So all the beers that you have bought over the years.
And I have.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
critical to the whole business plan there is to actually have some sales.
Yeah.
So I went out and I talked with all the wholesalers. We were only in San Diego County at that time. I talked with all the wholesalers, and one by one, they all said, no thanks. Yeah. Except for one of them. Mm. One of them said, yeah, you know what? And this was now early November or middle November. He says, we'll take your beer. And we'll start next month in December. And that's right. It was early November. And then it was around middle or later November that they said, you know what? I got a call and they said, you know what? Actually, December, bad time. The holiday seasons is just too much. We're way too focused on too many other things. Holiday incentives, blah, blah, blah. We'll start with you in January. That was starting. It was starting. And then literally halfway through December, I got a call and they said, oh, you know what? January, this would have been January of 1998 coming.
Yeah.
January, Super Bowl's coming to San Diego. It would have been at the end of this one. It was still in very late January that they held the Super Bowl. It's held in San Diego. It's going to be a crazy focus time. You know, this was a big beer distributor. They had a big beer brand, you know, major brand. And we got to focus on that and all of our sales team, and it's the wrong time to launch your beer.
Oh man.
So in other words, you know, you can start screaming that scream louder. middle of January, got the call, and they said, you know what? February, not a good time. It was the Super Bowl is going to be the end of this month, and our guys are going to be tired, and they're going to be need to take vacation time, and really, it's just so stressful, and you don't want to turn around and come and follow that. And now my head is literally because we are bleeding $20,000-$30,000 a month.
Yeah,
we are so fucked. Can I say that? I did.
Oh, dude, you know what? And Greg, listen. Here's what I just want to call out as we're both sitting here talking about this. Anybody on this phone call who is an entrepreneur who has been through anything real knows this feeling. It's like, oh my gosh, like there it is, and here we are, and that chasm seems infinite. You know, it seems infinitely deep. How are we going to get across over, you know, oh, I'm so, I can feel it in my body as you talk about it.
You know? And trust me, so can I, because just telling the story takes me back. And so almost like clockwork, middle of February, I got a call.
Okay.
But this one was different. And he said, you know what? We've changed our minds. We've decided it's not the right match for us.
Oh.
That's what he said. And what I heard was, you know what? I'm sorry, but we're going to let your company die.
Oh.
And I, it's funny how every time I tell this story, I get a lump in my throat.
Yeah.
I've told this story on, you know, I tell the story on stage sometimes, if I get on a talk, and I'll literally like, fuck, Greg, stop it. You're starting to choke up. I don't want to choke up right now. I don't want to like, seriously, you know, like I have to do like, something's in my eye, excuse me, you know, and it just, cause it takes me back to that was the most traumatic moment. So I walked over into Steve's office after I'd hung up the phone, and he looked at me and his eyes got wide, because I know I looked like I probably was pale, looked like I'd seen a ghost or something.
Oh, dude, oh.
And he just looked up at me and me like, what? And, you know, I told him, and we were like, I didn't know how we were going to make it.
Yeah.
And of course, this turned out to be that big but. You know, March was the next month, and March is the month in the beer industry where the clouds part, the sun shines, the angels sang, and people, you know, bought beer and more beer than they ever had from us. You know, I didn't know what the seasonality, I didn't really understand. I mean, I could have understood it on paper, but I didn't understand what seasonality really could do for us. The difference between February, a January, a February, and a March.
Yeah. Yep.
And March turned out to be our first breaking even month.
Oh, my gosh, dude, that's so good. And I've heard that story before, but that was a very good telling. Now, is it just St. Patrick's Day, or is it other things about March?
Oh, no, it's St. Patrick's Day. I mean, it's great for, you know, certain types of beer.
Uh-huh.
We call that an amateur hour. People just go out and get faced.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Okay. That's not really.
I remember my first beer. I mean,
yeah, exactly. I'm super happy if you choose to drink a stone on St. Patrick's Day. That's great. That's a plus mark for you, but maybe don't get faced.
Yeah.
That's a comment that falls on deaf ears.
What is it about March?
It's just, you know, it's spring. Spring, summer,
and people are just like, "Let's go." You know,
the sunshine, the weather's starting to turn.
And you're in San Diego, so that's, you know, in March where I am now in Salt Lake City.
Right.
It might not be the same thing. So
that's correct. It's your late May, early June.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's March for you.
Yeah.
That's such a great story, and that is such an entrepreneur's journey. And that is just, I think anybody listening to this that's been in business for a little while just goes, oh my God, I know how you felt.
Yeah, it was the lowest moment to a we can do this.
Yeah.
We are going to do this.
Dude, how great was that march? So that's March of 1999?
98.
Okay. All right. Yeah. March of 1998, right? Because it was January of 98, Super Bowl in San Diego. Okay. That's freaking so cool. All right. Well, you know, here's March. Here's to March, you know?
Yeah. Here's to March. Hold tears to that.
Yeah. Well, listen, while we're on it, and by the way, I always tell people, you know, and so first of all, I tell people, if you shove your emotions down, Greg, and you like fake it that it's, you know, I got something in my eye, everybody else listening is going to do that. And they don't really want to do that. What they really want to do is experience that full depth of emotion with you. And what I will say is that people worry that if they tell the same story very often, then it's going to lose its power. But what you just did is an example of what I think is really important. You went back to the actual moment. You didn't go back close to the moment. You went back to the moment. And if you go back to the moment, you will always get that lump in your throat and start to tear up and feel that feeling you felt. The reason people stop doing that after they tell the story a little bit is because it's just too painful and hard to go back to the actual moment. So they go back sort of close, but not really. So thank you for actually going back to that moment. And I think that really it's generous of you to share that and really go back to that moment so we can go with you, because it just means so much more and it hits so much harder, if you will, in the positive sense. So let's take you to Berlin now, just to get it kind of out of the way. Can you handle it?
Yeah, because, well, you know, Berlin is, you know, the story I just told about, 1998, you know, that was a 3-month period, but really culminating in that one phone call, that just really devastating phone call. And literally, I don't think the next day I could have told you what the guy on the other side of the phone said. I mean, I can paraphrase it with, a 90-something percent accuracy. Uh-huh. But what, again, you know, sort of what I heard was, we're going to let your company die.
Yeah.
You know, so that was that impactful. It was like really just pinning on that moment. Now, Berlin is a very different thing. Berlin.
And Greg, sorry, before you go to Berlin, one other thing that really stands out for me strongly about that is that after everything we just talked about on this call before that story, what people can realize is that moment when you heard the most devastating bad news of your life to that point, the thing that you thought was going to destroy your company, the thing that, like, if you had been a little less resilient, you would have just gone in and given it up right then, that turned out to be the best thing they could have ever done for you. Because you had to go figure out distribution, and now you are craft beer. You're the largest craft beer distributors in the United States, and I guess maybe in the world. And that horrible call in the middle of February was just the universe saying, oh no, we have much bigger plans for you.
Absolutely correct. That was the best thing that could have been. You're, hell yes.
Yeah, right?
And it has put us in a position of strength.
Yeah.
In Southern California, that is uncopyable.
Yeah. Yeah. No, nobody
can. Because we're of a time.
Yeah, it
was of a time when craft beer. So, you know, without getting into, you know, the weeds too much, you're a wholesaler. You have franchise rights for a brand. You put in energy, time, money, and energy to distribute a brand, a beer brand. And so if that beer brand wants to move to, you know, the bigger, better deal with another wholesaler, that other wholesaler has to negotiate and buy the rights, the distribution rights for that brand. And so we have the distribution rights for a lot of these brands that the other wholesalers, just like they didn't want Stone, they didn't want these other brands during this time that we are, you know, now we're talking to go back to the early 2000s. And that allowed us to really develop a portfolio. Now, you know, these brands, if you're a good wholesaler, the brands don't want to leave you, right? But we've had, like, we helped make St. Archer a brand in San Diego that, you know, then a number of years ago now sold out to Miller. So they became, you know, they got bought out by Big Beer. And the Miller, you know, parent company now wanted that brand to be distributed through their Miller network. Okay, fair enough. Well, they, you know, they had to buy the brand rights from us for that. You know, pretty much everybody else, they're very happy with Stone and they want to stay with Stone distributing. And that's the arrangement we have. But it's of a time. And so it's like, you know, Apple or Microsoft, you know, of course, you know, Steve Jobs and Bill Gates have a factor of intelligence and savvy and drive and, you know, everything that's a factor, many factors beyond me. I wouldn't compare myself to them to save my life. I wouldn't presume to, but they were of a time. Could you become an Apple or a Microsoft today? No, you could not.
There's somebody listening right now, maybe, who's just gotten that middle of February call. And I just want to remind you, whoever you are, there's a very good possibility that that call that like kind of almost makes you want to, you know, just throw in the towel. It's very possible that call is just the universe telling you, oh, no, you're thinking way too small. You know, we have much bigger plans for you.
Yeah. Keep going. I did hear that part. And,
yeah.
And I think that's kind of how it turned out.
Yeah.
Is that so we were able to do something that we did not conceptualize. In fact, yeah. I said in the, you know, at the beginning, I said, my partner, Steve, you know, I want to be a craft brewer. I don't want to be way too mundane. It seemed way too something we were interested in.
Yeah.
But we became, it was something that we learned that we learned to love it for yeah. all kinds of reasons that we couldn't conceptualize at the very beginning.
Right. Well, dude, it's
because I looked at wholesalers through the lens that you know, the of the wholesaler, they moved boxes for a living. They just looked at beer as a commodity. They couldn't really hand sell, as we would call it, which is talk about the features and benefits, the attributes,
right,
of the beer. You know, they were just like, you know, they would sell on price and sell on the temporary price reductions and things right. like that.
Yeah.
And I can remember giving a presentation to a major brand wholesaler in Arizona. I was in Phoenix. This was sort of simultaneous to that story, which was really centered around San Diego.
Uh-huh.
I remember I was opening the bottles. We just started bottling in 22-ounce bottles. Mm. And I was opening them and tasting for a full room. Like there was like 12 or 14 guys all in crisp white shirts and ties. And it was, you know, the manager of middle market, you know, one manager of broad market, manager of chain stores, manager of on-premise, manager right. of, you know, like they're very corporate-y.
Right.
And I said, okay. And this next one is Stone Smoke Porter. And as you can imagine from a porter, and I'd opened the bottle as I was talking, I started to pour it into a glass and I was handing around the samples and I'd already said what the beer was. And one of the guys in the audience said, "Ooh, that's dark." And I thought to myself, and I bit through my bottom lip, I'm like, I just said it was a porter. What would you possibly expect? Mr. Beer Guy, like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah,
you're raising your eyebrows and saying, "Ooh, that's dark," at a porter. You guys are idiots. Okay, that's not fair. You guys are just not. You don't know anything about beer. And truth is, they didn't really know anything about beer.
They didn't. Yeah, they sold
the big, your big beer wholesaler of the late '90s didn't know anything about beer.
Yeah,
that's it took so 20 funny. Years. For yeah. 15. Yeah, you know, 10. It depends where and which wholesaler. 10, yep. 15, 20. And there's still some that don't really know anything about yep. beer. They just, you know, that's not what they train their staff for. Yep. Train their staff to sell boxes.
Yeah. Well, you know, but the other side of that, like you said, you guys came to the realization, right? And it's why when I had my companies back in the day in the .com arena and stuff, I fell in love with my accountant and my freaking, you know, the person who, you know, my logistics officer, you know, like that kind of stuff. Because I think that Napoleon said an army marches on its belly, and you can have all kinds of great beer, but if you can't get it out there where people can buy it, right? Well, guess what? You know, you get that call in the middle of February and think it's the end of your company, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
I think that's my favorite, Napoleon.
Yeah.
I'm going to share with my favorite thing I learned about Napoleon. And I read this about him, that evidently he told his secretary to not open any letters from his generals, from wherever, until 3 weeks after they arrived. Now, you imagine Napoleonic times.
It took a long time to get there.
Yeah, exactly. And he basically figured that that was enough time for whatever their crisis was to have self-resolved, and that he really just didn't need to get involved in their crisis, their temporary crisis.
Wow. That's so good.
Imagine if that was Twitter. I mean, look at anything, you know, the 99% of what people are tweeting about in crisis today. Not add 3 weeks, add 4 weeks, because, imagine that week that it took for the letter to even get to Napoleon's secretary.
Right.
So you know, that crisis of 4 weeks ago. Now we have some real ones. So COVID was around 4 weeks ago.
Yep,
you know,
yep.
Racial inequality and inequity was around 4 weeks ago. You know, so that would still raise up. But the latest Karen, whatever, that would not make the bar.
You just solved the whole problem. Like, let's just put a 4 week delay on every bit of social media.
Right.
That would be like, can you imagine? That would be so cool. That is a scream. Somebody's got to write a virus that does that.
I love That's it. So have you seen the new documentary, The Social Dilemma, yet?
I'm actually working with a company that I'm really excited to talk about when the time comes, that I think is out to solve one of the fundamental issues of that problem. But I have not seen the movie yet, but I've heard about it from everybody that I'm on the team with. And it's a real problem. You know, that is a real, real problem.
You just used a really big word there, though. You said the word solve. That sounds powerful.
Well, Greg, it is powerful. It's really powerful. And, you know, fundamentally, there is this problem because we want to be connected, but we do not have the ability to be connected and maintain our autonomy, right? Like, if we want to be connected, we've got to give all of our data to Facebook and Google and so all of a sudden Google knows every single thing about everything. And okay, let's say they've got some, they've got some boundaries between things, but come on, everybody knows that Amazon watches what little resellers are doing. And when it starts to catch fire, they jump in and do it. And put the little reseller on Amazon out of business,
right?
Because they have all the information.
And how can the little reseller afford to not be on Amazon?
On Amazon, you're screwed, right? And look, we're doing that with every single bit of it. And here's the other part: computers don't die. We all die. It's the same problem we have empowering corporations the way we have. They don't die. They're like vampires that have the rights of humans. So what are our kids going to do, right? How do we, like, we're handing off a world that is just not going to work, man. And we don't have an artificial intelligence is not folded into humanity, right? We don't have human supervision on it. Greg, what we just did is we just spent more money than we could even imagine on the brightest minds that we produced to create artificial intelligence, whose fundamental ultimate goal ended up being to divide us. I'm sorry, that was freaking stupid.
I do believe that, though, and they cover this in the film Social Dilemma, that none of them intended for. They weren't really.
Dude, that's the problem. They just threw everything into a black box and said, optimize it to keep people on Facebook. Guess what? They didn't think about that one enough, because the best way to keep people on Facebook is to push people to either extreme of whatever. Like if they click on something slightly right, they get drawn out to the furthest right wacko theories. And if they click on something left, they get drawn out to the same theories just from the left perspective, you know? And that was a massive failure of imagination right there.
Well, they're just they're just copying basically the food industry
and the media.
That's exactly.
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly what the food industry
You're
is
so
doing.
Right.
Basically,
that
focus groups on should the cheese it or I don't need the your little cheese flavored cracker square.
Right.
I'll be non brand specific here.
Sure.
Yeah. Should it have a little bit more salt to it? Should it have a little bit more of that, you know, dextrin flavoring or whatever the heck they do with that thing? And and they go through these focus groups and they dial and they dial and they tweak and they tweak and they get it to the point where it just hits all these receptors that are hardwired into your brain.
Yep.
Just like you know, I remember when I really learned to really dislike Scully, the guy that, you know, famously fired Steve Jobs from Apple. So Scully, previous to Apple, he was chief exec at Pepsi.
Oh, wow.
And what they did,
I remember
what they did is they picked a number of households, probably, you know, I don't know, 200, 500 households. And they literally would load them up with free everything, you know, because Pepsi, Frito-Lay. So they had, you know, Little Debbie apple pies and, you know, Fritos and that, every kind of junk food and processed food you could imagine. They literally just loaded them up. And what they learned was the only thing, the only product that they would make that had no satiety point, which means no point at which the consumer would go, yeah, you know what? I've had enough.
I've had enough.
I'm done. Was soda.
Oh.
So, you know, that your snack cakes, your snack chips, your everything else, all had a point where like, okay, no, I'm done. I'm not going to have any more of that.
I just can't eat another one of those.
And the only thing that is the more they would bring, more of whatever ran out, they would bring more of that to the family the next week.
Yeah.
I mean, it really, it seems like it's evil work now, you know, to look at it
from
the lens of 2020.
Yeah.
And so what did they do? You know what came out of that? What came out of that was literally that's when 2 liters, 1 liters and 2 liters and suitcases for soda were invented.
Oh,
they
man,
didn't exist
dude.
Until then.
The
but
more
they realized
you
realized
it
was
to carry home. Yeah.
Right. Because there was no satiety point. And you can look at the inflection point of obesity. So, you know, we've seen this. And we have a very difficult time in solving this problem for human beings.
Yeah.
You know, I've been an outspoken critic of sodas for years. And I've gotten pushback from people on social media because, well, social media. you know, say, hey, Greg, you know, who the hell are you to talk? You're in the beer industry and the beer industry. And then they'll give me some statistic about, you know, drunk driving or, you know, whatever else.
Right.
And I'm like, look, all I'm suggesting is what we already have for the alcohol industry. You can't buy alcohol anywhere. You can't buy it at any time.
Yeah.
You can't buy it at any age.
Yeah.
There are regulations and there are taxation of directly associated to try and address the, you know, that there can be, you know, for certain people, there could be downsides to alcohol. You know, and I think certain people shouldn't drink soda. Oh, by the way, I'll raise my hand as I did some 15, 20, 25, I don't even know how long ago. I'm like, I don't drink soda. No, hell no.
No, I don't. Yeah, I totally don't. I would never do that again.
Yeah, that's just like, it's awful. And yet, you know, they were trying to convince the world that, you know, it's for parents and teachers. To help the kids understand. And I'm like, are you kidding me? You tell me a moment where parents and teachers can outgun Beyonce
Right. No way.
In the influence of kids, you know, because Beyonce used to shill for Pepsi, I think.
Oh, dude, Michael Jackson.
Yeah, back in the day, the Pepsi generation.
Yeah,
right?
Dude, the most influential people, right? Well, very, very good point. And like, there is a Sadie point with alcohol. Like, there is a place, you know.
Well, for some people, there isn't.
I guess, you know,
and that's
not
the reality. Yeah. And we have to openly, in fact, we do openly acknowledge it and go, okay.
Yeah.
There's for some people,
I guess not. That's true.
It's not appropriate. Yeah. That's just the reality of it. And then, you know, there's most people. The thing is, most people are able to enjoy alcohol responsibly. And most people who are able to enjoy it responsibly, actually, you know, moderate drinkers live longer than teetotalers on average, as well as living longer than people who drink too much, who abusers.
Yeah.
So you want to be in that, you know, modesty spectrum.
Yeah.
And you're going to be great.
Well, and Greg, though, I mean, I think that there is a, you know, the point that I would take away from that is when I look at this bottle that I have in front of me, it says government warning, according to the Surgeon General, right? Like, there should be some kind of warning like that on soda, on sugary and even non-sugary soda, you know?
I don't think that they should sell to kids. I don't think kids should be able to buy sugary sweetened stuff. Because there's nothing but negative, but negative.
Totally.
But, you know, it's just like it should follow, you know, there used to be a time when you smoking while pregnant was, you know, and doctors would say, my brand is, you know, Pall Mall.
Yeah, right. If you're going to smoke when you're pregnant, only smoke Pall Mall.
Right.
Yeah. Wow. Well, okay. So that's what this show is all about, is wherever it takes us. So, but I do think that it would be great to talk about Berlin, even though I know I'm dragging you into some painful stuff, and you'll have to go back to that moment too. But
I'm very open about it. Like, look, you know, Berlin was a failure, but it was a failure on a variety of levels, and primarily, it wasn't, I don't believe it was a failure of concept or desire or need. It was a failure of boldness. We simply went, you know, as my blog post, which I'd recommend anybody that's even slightly interested to read, you know, Google search or whatever, your DuckDuckGo, your, the phrase, too big, too bold, too soon, and Stone Berlin with that. And that's essentially what it was. I had my biggest miscalculation was that I miscalculated the Germans' interest in the conversation of beer. Yep. My sad, really slow realization was that Germans don't talk about beer. Beer just is. Beer is looked at as a commodity. Beer is quite cheap. Beer, you know, Germany is the cheapest country in Western Europe for beer.
Yeah,
literally, you know, the German pride in beer is justified historically. But the problem is, and you know, all people, especially Americans, you know, more Americans have a problem with me saying these things than Germans, especially Germans in the industry who kind of know the reality of what I am willing to say out loud.
And, well, look, I'm part,
you know,
German.
To an American is blasphemy. Oh, my God, you can't say that.
I agree with you. And I think I know what you're saying, and being half German and having been over there a lot and relatives, and, you know, you're right. You're right. Go ahead and say it, Greg.
Well, they're just like, why would I, what's to talk about? You go get beer, you drink it.
Yeah. I mean, when was the Reinheitsgebot, when was that brought in? Like, what year was that? Do you know?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So the Reinheitsgebot is famously thought of as the world's first ever consumer protection law.
It's beer. It's a beer purity law. Yeah,
it's not.
Well,
that's the
image
and reality.
That's how it gets
pushed.
Is, yeah.
Right. It gets pushed as a beer purity law. It was a taxation law, and it wasn't until 1951 was the first time that the word Reinheitsgebot ever was on a German beer label. It is a modern day reinvention of the meaning behind a 1516 taxation law. So
15,
if you
16.
Go to, if you go to the 1800s, they didn't think that nobody was talking about the Ryanitzka bolt. You go to the 1700s, nobody was talking about the Ryanitzka bolt. 1600s, nobody was talking about it. 1500s, when it was created, people weren't talking about it unless you're in the industry and you understood what the taxation meant and the implications and, you know, this kind of stuff. But guess what? All of a sudden in the 1900s, it became, you know, some marketers figured out, oh, this is a point of differentiation we can make this a point of differentiation. And yeah. We can say that every other country is adulterating their beer, but German beer is pure. And it stuck.
And it worked. Yep.
It stuck.
Yep. I've fallen for marketing too.
Oh, sure. I mean, one of the serious considerations, we came very close to naming our beer, our brewery, not Stone Brewing, the 1516 Brewing Company.
Oh, there you go. Wow. That's interesting.
Yeah. This would have been 1995 when we were ideating for names, and 1516 Brewing Company was a big consideration. And I created some marketing, you know, phraseology and other stuff around it, and, you know, talking about purity and everything, because I had fully believed that that was the truth, that that was the true story.
Yeah.
But, you know, today in Germany, what would you take to, if you're invited to somebody's house for dinner, what would you take with you?
Well, Berliner Kindle. Yeah.
You'd bring a bottle of wine.
Oh, really?
You bring a bottle of beer. No, you wouldn't bring beer. That would be like, I don't know, bringing a half gallon of milk or something. You know, it's like, why would you bring?
I had enough of that already this morning. Yeah.
Correct. Exactly. Greg, they just don't think of it that way. But in the United States, we would.
Yeah. You know, my dad worked for an oil and gas company. It was actually a natural gas company. And I remember when he went to Germany one time, and I forget what he was doing over there, but he was visiting another gas company. And he went down to the canteen in the morning at like 7 a.m. And he said that these two guys who were clearly working on the gas lines, you know, in their coveralls and everything, were sitting over there having breakfast, and they each had a, you know, like one of those big beer steins full of beer with their breakfast. And he was like, if somebody working on a gas line had a beer like that before they went to work, like the whole company would be shut down. And here in the canteen at the company, they're serving that beer. So Germans have a different relationship with beer. It is kind of like milk.
Yeah, a very, very different relationship with beer. With beer being such a commodity, the idea of paying more, like, you know, you'd have a 500 milliliter can in the grocery store of, you know, your typical German beer would be 69 cents euro. So that would be still less than a dollar.
Wow.
Way cheaper than here.
Yeah,
and our beer would, you know, be for a equivalent, you know, 11.2 ounces, you know, 355. It's, you know, the smaller size, so close to the 12 ounce can that we have, would be $2. And here, that's a perfectly fine price for you know, craft beer. We have complete acceptance of that.
Yeah.
There, people would get mad at the idea. Like, what are you trying to do? You're trying to sell this beer to me from a can.
Yeah.
Cans are for cheap beer. Why do you put your beer on the cans?
Right. Yeah.
And, and it's with you know, honor and respect that I have my bad German accent.
That you do that terrible accent. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you're forgiven.
Just like I might affect, you know, a southern drawl if I'm telling a different kind of story. But, you know, exactly. I'm telling a story about Germany right now.
There you go.
Can I tell you one of my favorite stories to tell?
Yeah,
about
please.
Berlin?
Of course, of course.
So we had been, we built a large brewery and a very large restaurant on the kind of outskirts of Berlin in a beautiful old gasworks facility. With grounds and everything. And destination place. I know you did.
So I know beautiful. Oh my God. It was
so proud of it.
It was so beautiful. So wow. Yeah.
So but it had been incredibly stressful to get it open. And, that German efficiency and everything out the window.
Beer, like, Jesus. Beer Jesus. Let's, make a plug here for Beer Jesus. Go find, is that on Netflix or?
It's on Amazon Prime.
Amazon.
The Beer Jesus from America.
The Beer Jesus from America. Prime. If you're a beer fan, a craft beer fan, or you find this conversation interesting, that is a fabulous movie about this whole thing. And sorry to interrupt.
Entrepreneurial story. Not at all. It's definitely part of it. And okay. So you can imagine, especially if you've seen the movie, you can imagine, by the time we are opening, and this was still a month before our grand opening ceremony, which is what the film closes shortly after that. It's filmed up to that point. And so this was about a month and a half before the last filming ever took place for that documentary. And anyway, so I'm standing, and I was standing right at the threshold from the inside to the outside, and we had a very large patio. It was a beautiful day, and we had a nice crowd, a decent crowd. And I paused at the threshold for just a moment to sort of surveying everything. And I saw this German man, probably about 75, and it looked like he was beelining right to me. So I just paused for a second to see. And sure enough, he came right up to me, and he just came right up and pretty close, said, "I understand you are the owner here." Yes. Hi, I'm Greg. What can you do? Well, what can I do for you? And he said, "I have something I want to tell you." And as you can imagine, I sort of started to clench just a little bit inside, tense up a little bit. But hey, my job is to hear everything. And I said, "Yes, sir." Politely, "Yes, sir. What is it?" And he says, he looked right up. He took another half step towards me. He said, "Your beer tastes like I used to remember. Thank you." And he clapped me on the shoulder.
Oh, Greg, that is so great.
It was the most awesome thing. That just made the 4 years prior to that worth it. Moment.
Everything worth it.
Oh, man. So he was, and I knew what he was. So I know the German beer industry. I know the beer industry. I've studied it. I understand.
Yeah.
So the quick of it is, in the 1970s, a German Pilsner would have been significantly more bitter.
Yeah.
Significantly higher hop load than it does today. Even the beer breweries that are saying, true to the recipe, brewed since, 1632.
Yeah.
Trust me, that's BS. Yeah. It's all BS.
Let's come back to that for a sec. Finish your story, but I want to come back to that, okay?
Well, the story is the German beer recipes have changed, and they've shortened the brewing time, they've lightened the malt load, they've lightened the hop load. The beer's basically become a lot softer.
So they
a lot less complex and a lot more homogenized.
They should arguably say are brewed with the same basic stuff. Right? Not the same recipe at all.
No.
Well, Greg.
So what he was telling me was he remembered he was old enough to have been a better beer drinker in the 1970s.
Yeah.
And I found out he'd been drinking a Stone IPA, which is not what German beer tasted like in the 1970s, but it would have been more similar than the German beers of today.
Yeah.
And he was able to connect to it and say, this is what I remember. Yeah.
It's a great beer made with great ingredients.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which still can be found in Germany, but trust me, it's stupid hard.
You got to try really hard.
It's really, really hard. You go into the typical beer stores and you cannot find anything other than commoditized versions.
Yeah.
It's really horrible. And you see lots of regional brands, but they're all, again, if you're in the inside of the industry, you all know that they've all been bought up. They're all brewed at the same factories. It's all been consolidated. It used to be brewed, 20 minutes away. Now it's brewed 3 hours away.
It's just packaging.
That's just the way that the commodity industry works. It's become commodified.
Well, so Greg,
and we have reversed that, and it's reversing in Germany today, and it's reversing throughout Europe.
And that's fabulous. And I thank you for that personally. So Greg, a quick question.
Yeah.
It's As I understand it, all beer, even back in 1615 or 1516 or whatever it was, like up until the 1800s when Pasteur did his thing, all beer was essentially sour beer on some level. Is that correct?
No.
No.
Sorry. So I'm correct. Glad. Very glad. You started off the show by opening, and you've been enjoying a Stone 08-08-08 vertical left scale. Yes.
By the way, the sweetness is coming up now that it's, I don't know if beer breathes like wine, but, you know, definitely.
As it warms up, the sweetness, so colder temperature a beer is, the hops, if it's a hoppy beer, the hops will be accentuated until you really get that hoppy, bitter snap colder, and it starts to mellow out as it warms up a little bit.
You know what? And I did start really cold on this, and it's definitely nicely warm. And I think this is a better temperature for this beer now. It was fun to go through all of it, but it's
good. Yeah, it takes you on the journey. So that beer is now 12 years and a little more old. It's not pasteurized. We don't pasteurize any of our beers. Pasteurization is not typical in craft brewing, and yet most craft beers are not sour. In fact, when we make sour beers, unless there is a brewery that just has really poor quality control, the souring is on purpose. We make a lot of sour beers,
I like sour beers a lot.
Yeah, heck yeah. So So that's a little bit of a misconception that prior to pasteurization, beers were sour. Now, what happened was they didn't know as much about microbiology back in the day.
Yeah, they didn't isolate all the different strains of yeast as well, right?
Right. Well, what they would do is they would take a little bit of the foam from the previous fermentation, and they would inoculate the next batch with that foam, and that would be the next. And so basically, the house yeast of a brewery would have that house character and it would be, it would just carry on through. And you basically, if you could go back in time, you would take swabs on the tabletops and on the, the counters and the walls and everything else. And you would find that strain of brewer's yeast present everywhere.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
So that's another one of the things that has become homogenized in the industry is that, most of those house yeasts aren't being used anymore because they might have been a little bit fickle or, whatnot. And so you go to, different yeast strains that are, more easily controllable in controlled environments and things. And that just homogenizes the flavor profile.
Yeah. Well, so you remind me of one of my favorite places, and I I'd love to hear your take on them, but gosh, what is that place with the guy drinking, leaning back on the chair? Cantillon.
Okay.
I love Cantillon. And you're also you're bringing up for me our mutual buddy Stefan Kruger, who runs the Berlin Beer Festival. He did a fabulous sour tasting, I guess 2 years ago when we were there. Was it last year even? But we went to this place called like the trumpet or the something, the flugelhorn or something. And there was this, he did an unbelievable sour beer tasting paired with food. And it was just one of the best things ever. It was so good.
Sour beers is a big misconception amongst a lot of people. And so going to a sour beer fest can really help you understand it. Just like bitter beers, beers are not lineal. It's not just more or less bitterness in a beer. Sour isn't lineal. It's not just more or less sour. It's really three-dimensional. You can go off on different branches and the character of the bitterness of a bitter beer or the character of the sourness on a sour beer is really wide and varied. And so if you don't like one, you may love another.
It's worth trying.
Absolutely. Dive in, enjoy the richness of life it has to offer. It's like, so many things that are an acquired taste. When you acquire them, you then become a fan.
Yeah.
Sushi or, great wine or any, hops. Yes.
By the way, I just do want to tell you that it's night here, but I'm looking out the window I can't see out the window, but right out there are my hops. I have just some standard old, you know, hops, and I'm growing them in my backyard. And every year I pick them, and then I go down to 8th South here in Salt Lake City, and I get some artisanal well water that just flows out of the ground. Like they stuck a pipe down and it just flows out 24/7. So I go down there, I get 5 gallons of that. I use the hops from my backyard. I go to this great place here in town called the Beer Nut, get the other stuff I need. And I make a thing called Tom's Local Yokel, which is an IPA made in honor of my best friend's dad, Tom Curris, who just died about 2 years ago of brain cancer, way too early. He was in his mid-70s. One of the best guys I have ever met in my life. And so the hops are almost ready to pick out there. I think, you know, it's September 24th here. I think I got to get on it, actually.
In that time, yeah. You don't want to let them go too long, or they get that sort of cheesy quality. They can get a little bit of a, you know, oniony quality.
Uh-huh. So what is it like there's plenty of the yellow stuff in there, the whatever that is, when I break them open.
That sounds like a medical condition.
isn't that the lupulin or something?
Yeah, okay, in the hop. So you break open the hop cone. Yes, you're seeing the glands, which also sounds medically, but the glands, and that's where the bitterness of the lupulin and alpha acids and beta acids and, you know, creates that flavor profile and the bitterness of beer.
And they're starting to get a little bit brown on the edges, some of them, but most of them are still just really nice and pretty and green. But, you know, it's getting a little late in the season. So I think this weekend I'm probably going to have pick those puppies, huh?
And do you make you're making a fresh hop beer with them?
I just wet hop the whole. I just pretty much throw wet it hop, all in hop, there.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, and I get a little bit of bittering hops up front, just, you know, like, you know, some pellets to throw in just to make sure we got enough bitter. But then I just throw in just a horde of things at the end.
I don't remember ever getting a bottle of that.
Well, you know, I don't know if I've ever given you one, Greg. I got to do it really right this year and put it in the mail and see what you think. Somebody did taste my thing at this cool beer club that I'm a part of. And I don't think he was super impressed with everything else, but he said, this is extremely clean. And he was like, you did a great job making sure nothing else got into this. And so,
that's fantastic. That's beer talk for not letting, you know, an inappropriate organism kind of come in and funkify in the wrong way. Right.
Exactly.
Well, that's great.
Yeah. So, and you know what I did the first year is I didn't cool it fast enough. So it ended up a lot more bitter and less hop nose than I wanted. But then last year I got one of those little copper things where you run the cold water through and did everything I could do to freaking cool that thing down as fast as I could. And it turned out really nice, I think.
Yeah. Heat exchanger is a key component to
brewing. I exchange some heat.
Oh, that's great. That's fun.
So Greg, coming back to this whole topic of leadership and communication, you know, I'd love to hear a few things that you have to say. And by the way, I mean, we've been going for a long time. Like, I don't want to stop. We'll, you know, if you got to go, tell me, but I don't think we're there yet.
Dinner time.
Okay. You let me know. I remember we talked years ago and I think that one of your kind of, I don't know, leadership mantras is just something around be excellent, like do really great stuff. Do you remember that conversation? Yeah. It was at your house and
and I know what it's about. It's our phrase. It's been our unofficial. I don't know if we've actually ever made it our official mission statement, but it's be amazing.
Be amazing.
Be amazing.
Yep.
And that acknowledgeable, you know, acknowledge that can mean different things to different people, and that's okay. So do that. Do what you think is the most amazing thing. Now, there's you know, parts of the people's jobs where there isn't that level of flexibility. Like, don't decide that it's less amazing to, you know, not follow this, or more amazing to not follow a certain safety procedure.
Right, right,
Follow the safety procedure, no matter what, whether you agree with it or not, follow it.
Yep.
And if you think it should be changed, then go through a procedure to get it changed, to improve it. That would be a good thing to do. That would definitely be the more amazing thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, don't decide it's more amazing to set this table in the bistro different than the rest of the tables just because you think it'd be an amazing thing. Wouldn't it be amazing if we put all the forks in the middle?
And like, right, and made everybody reach for them.
but there are so many.
To the manager, maybe it is a good idea. But
yeah, right. Okay, maybe that becomes a thing.
Yeah, that's so funny.
But you get the point. Yeah. So yeah.
Well, and then tell us. Sorry. Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, that was sort of that mentality is where Stone Distributing, you know, the distribution arm of Stone Brewing that we talked about. You know, what's more amazing? Distributing your own beer, which you have a lot of faith in and belief in, and you think is really great, you think is going to delight people and, you know, and be a good business proposition for the markets and groceries and bars and restaurants that you work with. What's more amazing, doing that or also adding a portfolio of other great stuff from other great breweries? And bringing that along with you on the same trucks for efficiency and helping people be introduced to even more beers. And that was a very clear answer. We're like, oh, it's more amazing to do that second thing. And so that drove some of the decision-making.
That's really cool. That's really, really cool. And I totally get that. That's awesome. So now let's talk really quickly in that same vein about Arrogant Bastard, because you know you're probably not sophisticated enough to really, really get this. But tell me about that, because that was, you know, that's one of my favorite things. Like, it's when I fell in love with you and I didn't know you yet.
Well, I'm flattered, but feel awkward.
Yeah, right. Me too. Which is perfect.
Yeah, so Arrogant Bastard Ale, you know, it was definitely of a time.
Yeah.
When people didn't understand what beer could be, and you know, still most people, when you asked them what was beer, you know, craft beer wouldn't have been one of the possible responses that they could, you know, except to the crazy geeks, you know, really fringe people.
Super deep, yeah.
And so, Arrogant Bastard Ale was created as a, you know, the farthest end of the spectrum alternative to all of that, you know, intensely and unabashedly bitter. It was, you know, unbalanced towards the maltiness while simultaneously being unbalanced towards the bitterness.
Which is why it's so good. It's amazing. That's why I thought of it.
So we just kind of took a very aggressive stance with that particular beer. And its attitude.
Yep.
And you're paraphrasing, and I'll say, you know, pretty badly, to be honest with you.
Well, so here, let me just run this by you, Greg. This is an aggressive beer. You probably won't like
probably
it.
Probably won't like it.
It is quite doubtful.
Yeah, the taste or sophistication to be able to appreciate an ale of this quality and depth. I'm just doing it from memory here.
We would suggest that you stick to safer and more familiar territory, maybe something with a multi-million-dollar ad campaign aimed at convincing you it's made at an independent brewery, or one that implies that their tasteless fizzy yellow beer, seltzer fizzy yellow beer, whatever the hell, will give you more sex appeal. Perhaps you think multi-million-dollar ad campaigns make all that junk taste better. Perhaps you're mouthing your words as you read this. That was the moment you had me, because that was freaking hilarious. And it goes on, and it's really good. And you got to go get a bottle of Arrogant Bastard to get the rest of this, because we're not going to, you know, we don't know if you're worthy, really.
You know, we had coasters for so long that had that written on the back of them, and I would see people. I would love watching somebody pick it up in a bar, or just sit in the bar sipping whatever their beer was, and they would read it, and they would. I would notice if somebody, especially if somebody was sort of lip reading, you know, mouthing their words, and then they would come to the, and perhaps you're mouthing your words as you read this, and I would die I'd watch them because you watch somebody mouth the phrase and perhaps you're mouthing your words as you read this and watch that moment of self-realization.
That's a scream.
Kind of priceless.
That is so funny. That's so funny. By the way, I am also munching my Stone Tangerine Express IPA 100% grass-fed beef jerky. I'm mostly whole food plant-based these days, but I stray once in a while when it's worth it.
Okay, wow.
So Greg, it has been such a blast. Thanks for being so generous with your time, because like this is take two, you know, on top of everything else. But I want to just acknowledge you for all those things that I don't even know about that it took to just keep going. And for whatever it was, those experiences growing up, you know, you alluded to it earlier, you know, like not being the cool kid and all that kind of stuff. And I think everything that we go through is exactly what we need in order to accomplish what we end up accomplishing, you know, and all that stuff. And the other thing I'll say is that I know that the experience with Stone Berlin was painful. I want to acknowledge you mano a mano. I think that you got something important out of that and you were open to getting it. And I think it has upped you as a human being. Like that sounds like, hopefully I don't sound like a jerk saying that, but I always liked you. I think the experience of Stone Berlin has given you a new depth and a new appreciation that I hear over there somehow. And I just want to acknowledge you because I know how painful that is to get that, you know?
Thank you. That actually means quite a lot to me. And to be honest, you know, if I had a choice between having Stone Berlin or having that depth, I'd probably take Stone Berlin, but
it's because you're shallow. And I can't blame you at all. Yeah, I can't blame you at all.
So, well, some of those, you know, some of that depth that we get, you know, if we're lucky, we get a little depth along in our lives. Some of it's pretty hard fought, hard won, and this was, and not always feeling like what you wanted at the moment.
Yeah, sure.
But maybe we do get some of it. So thanks. I suppose it's my silver lining. I'll take it as a compliment.
Yeah, it certainly meant as one. And I loved you before, so you know that. Well, listen, I wish you all the best. And I'm obviously a massive fanboy of Stone Berlin, and I'm okay with that. And so I just, you know, thanks to everybody that joined us for this conversation. I hope that our beer geeking out didn't detract from the leadership lessons. I am, you know, what you're going to miss now is I'm going to hit pause on the record and then I'm going to ask Greg about my spice oddity and my, you know, my Stone Vertical Epic 10-10-10. And we're going to geek out.
Oh, yeah, the beer's in your collection. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to say it publicly here. What's the answer? Because John sent me, texted me a couple of pictures of his, you know, rather impressive cellar.
It's been really depleted over the collectibles. Past COVID here, but you know,
yeah. So I'm going to give you the answer.
Yeah.
There, I looked at all of the bottles. All of them should be great. All of them should be very drinkable. Mostly what you collected was stuff that is collectible, ageable, cork finished, like the Vertical Epic designed to be aged.
Yeah.
But still drink them.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to. Oh, of course I'm going to. And Greg,
just drink them.
I will. And you know, and I'm gonna like the IPAs. I know I've had them for a little long, but I did that on purpose. I got one to drink then, and then I got one to keep just to remember how good that one was a little while later. And what I didn't send you is all of the enjoy afters that I have.
I love those. You can save for to have with me. I love all of the beers, but those enjoy afters are especially special to me. You cannot get there. Like some of the ones, like the, you said the Spice Oddity, which is a spiced Imperial Stout, barrel aged, and you've got some other barrel aged beers. They'll taste really amazing when we release them, and then they'll sort of mellow and sort of become one with themselves, you know, a little more, year after year for a few years.
Yeah.
But the But, you know, fundamentally, they don't radically change.
Yeah.
And the Stone and Joy After IPA, which is a beer we don't make anymore.
No, really?
As that ages, no, we don't make anymore.
Wow.
As that ages, you get into something that's irreplaceable. You cannot you have to go through the time to get there.
And they're that's really why that good.
Really.
They're so
I
good.
Love it.
Yeah. So what that is an IPA that is typically a very hoppy beer that you drink fresh, really fresh. But what you guys do at the end there is spike it with some Brettanomyces yeast, which is the wild yeast, the Belgian yeast, the funky, kind of cool, weird, does crazy stuff yeast. And then you put them in heavier bottles with a nice cork on them. And you're not supposed to drink it for at least a year later, right? And I've got some of those from many, many years. And I'm glad I got so many, because those are really, they really are fabulous and they change. I was looking at them and just thinking like, wow, I wonder what's going on in there right this minute. And they're really, really good.
It's still a lot. So I'll tell you here, I'll close with a little bit of brewing history that most people get wrong when it comes to IPAs.
Okay,
so
let's
IPAs,
do it.
When the style was originally in vogue in England in the 18th century, the 1800s, they were all Brett.
Oh, really?
Heavily Bretted, yes.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yeah, and so it's the clean IPAs, the hoppy, fresh IPAs of the American craft brewing revolution that, England had lost its way. The British brewers lost its way from those original IPAs long ago, and they became insipid, uninteresting, commoditized things.
Fizzy, yellow, seltzer, whatever the hell you want to call it.
Right. And there had been some IPAs brewed in the United States. Ballantine IPA was a famous one that became softer and softer and softer and softer over the years. You look at the brewing records. But the American craft brewing revolution, we really brought forth IPAs with hop varieties that never existed when the India Pale Ale style was first created.
Right.
And it brought forth something where really focused on fresh hop flavor.
Yeah.
And freshness. And it became freshness was the thing. So what you want is either kind of mostly one of two worlds. You want a fresh IPA that's probably not breaded. Brettanomyces, you want an aged IPA that is breaded, but that would be that's 0.001% of IPA sales in the United States today.
Yeah,
breaded beers are for enthusiasts. We go, oh my god,
I'm heartbroken. I'm still getting over the fact you don't make that anymore.
Well, John, it's not only not anymore, it's been a number of years, so you clearly weren't buying enough to support them. I don't blame you, because you're buying our other beers.
I moved to Salt Lake City, I moved to Salt Lake City about 3 years ago. My son Johnny is 4 now, and we moved here when he was, 6 months old, so it's going on 4 years. And I would always go down to the Pasadena shop and just freaking load up, and then we moved to Salt Lake, and I mean, I'm lucky if I can find, won't complain too much. There's
I know,
but I miss you guys.
You're in a challenged environment.
Yes, I am in a challenged environment. That's for sure.
Okay, my friend.
All right. So Greg, thank you so much. And I wish you the absolute best. I looking forward to seeing you again soon, man. And everybody, we're in the middle of the COVID epidemic right now, and there's all kinds of really tough stuff going on. I hope this has been a pleasant few moments to forget about that. And if you're listening to this later, man, I hope it's over. So Greg, always, I will be a fan, and thank you very, very much.
Thank you, brother. I love you too, man.
All right. Take care.
Cheers.
Cheers. Thank you for joining the Speak Like a Leader podcast. Go be awesome.